Podcast Network Asia.
There are a lot of symbolisms that I don't really understand. And sometimes if you try to read those things and no one will be able to explain to you, there's a tendency for me to think too much.
They would say, you know, God wants to marry you. And I'm a little weirded out with that because I relate to God as a father. Mm-hmm. And so when you say that this entity that I relate to as a father wants to marry me, I'm like,
I'd be like,
why?
I want to marry my dad.
Exactly.
So what does it mean to care for spiritual widows or spiritual orphans? Well, to do that, you have to know what marriage is to begin with. So it's not the marriage that God really wants us to be concerned with. It's this relationship between something that is spirit and something that is flesh.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Nerador Podcast. This is episode number 162. We're very excited because we have a guest who is joining us. I've been asking her to join us for some time now, but she's a very, very busy person. She is a TV news anchor and journalist. She's been a journalist for about 20 years now. She's a fixture in Philippine news television. You can catch her on Unang Hirit on GMA and other new shows on GMA 7 and GMA News TV. She's also a devout Catholic. I usually call her Sis, but for the purposes of this episode, I'm just going to call her Maurice Umali. Welcome to the Nerador Podcast. Come on in. Hi!
Annyeonghaseyo!
Annyeonghaseyo!
Oh my gosh, that's right. You're a total K fan
of
yes,
K-pop and everything K. Everything K.
I can't believe that slipped my mind. Let's talk about that a little bit. What are you into exactly? Is it the K-drama, the K-pop, the K-food? Which one is it?
I started with K-dramas.
Which what did it for you?
I was still in college.
Whoa.
You know, okay. when the dramas were still in VCDs or DVDs and you just buy those things.
I hate when to say that I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm like pretending. I've been with GMA for 20 years now, so I cannot deny.
Yeah, yeah. Which K-drama was it? Do you remember?
Well, I started, I think, with Endless Love 1, 2, and then Stairway to Heaven, The Jewel in the Palace, Tumong, All In, everything from way back. And then now I'm watching Business Proposal.
My yaya just told me to watch Business Proposal today.
You should. And then of course K-pop, BTS.
Yes,
and
you're into BTS.
Food. Also K skincare, everything about your country. And we have this group in Viber. It's a thread where we call ourselves Koreanas. Because we're assuming we're Koreans and Koreans are hometown.
Oh my gosh. Tell them the story of how you went to Korea to see a celebrity off to military service. Well, was he coming out or was he going? Which one was this? Oh my gosh. My memory is horrible.
Did you cover this
or you just went
coverage? It wasn't a coverage. It was just a vacation. We were just supposed to go to Korea to visit some landmarks because we are just great K-drama fans. Then we heard that Ji Chang-wook would be entering the military very soon. And it was that time when we were supposed to visit Korea. So we made it a point to see him off or send him off. And during that time, my husband, Rafi Tima, was covering in Marawi. Remember the Marawi siege?
Oh, yeah.
War there. And I don't know what was happening during that time when I called him. I think he was in the middle of a crossfire or something like that. What I remember is I called him because I was so excited and I told him that, Rafi, when you come back, we'll be going to Korea. That's our vacation. So, and then he said, why? What are you going to do in Korea? Well, we're sending off Ji Chang-wook because he's entering the military. And then he asked, who's Ji Chang-wook? He's my K-drama actor.
So let me get this straight. While your husband was in a war zone covering this, because he's also a journalist, you were in Korea sending off some other dude to military service.
Manila. And then I told him that once he comes back to Manila, we are going to Korea with our friends.
Here's a bigger question. Which movie did he popularize, or which series? Because I'm so
At that time, it was Empress Ki, which I was watching, where he was in. Okay. And of course, apart from Empress Ki is also a part of K2, Healer, and The Who Were Once is the Starstruck and the Love Struck in the City. And of course, the Street Rookie.
Oh my gosh, Sam. She puts you to shame, huh? With the K-drama.
Those were the exact words in my head. She is putting me to shame. You are like a K-drama encyclopedia. And
you wouldn't believe this, because when he finished his military service, we went back to Korea to fetch him.
Yeah. That is Marie Somali, everybody. You know what? I mean, you know, all things K, right? Because the church that is on the podcast right now and talking about the Book of Revelation is a K church, right? Oh, Shinseoji Church of Jesus is a Korean church. Instructor Aaron is actually in Korea right now. He's joining us from Korea. Yes. He's a Bible instructor over there with this church. And yes, we are going to make a hard left now to the Book of Revelation, because that is what this show is about at the moment. Okay.
Nice segue, Sam. Nice segue.
The Korean dramas, though, they've been making Korea known throughout the world. It's been pretty crazy. You know, I mean, you give like 10, 15 years ago, and not many people knew about South Korea. I mean, maybe you've heard of North Korea or something because of all the scariness or something. But yeah, the last like 15 years or so, the K-pop and the K-dramas and the acting has gotten incredible. It really has. Like some of the movies they've made and the actual acting, I've been blown away. I really have. The cinematography, everything. It's really incredible. The quality of everything here has just gotten so incredible. It's been fun to watch, actually.
That's very instructor, true.
Instructor Aaron, do you think that has anything to do with what Shinseoji is proclaiming right now? Because, and we're kind of jumping all over the place with this, but Shinseoji's understanding is that the events that are prophesied in the Book of Revelation, they actually took place in Korea. I mean, they're not all done fulfilling, but most of it has fulfilled. Yeah. And these are events that happened in Korea. I mean, when I heard this testimony, a part of me was like, oh my goodness, if this is true, it kind of explains like this K-wave sweeping over the world.
Which I tease you about all the time. I'm like, Korean song.
A little bit, you know?
Well, I mean, it definitely is helping to make it look good in the world. I mean, if anything, so make it known in the world. I don't know if I could attribute it to exactly that or anything, but it definitely, God can use anything, right? God can, regardless of what's happening in the world, God can use it for his own benefit. Even if man's the one doing it, then God can kind of hijack it, if you will, right? And use it for that kind of benefit. But one thing about Korea that I found fascinating, and to me, this does seem something that has a little bit more than just, you know, man being able to do it, but there hasn't been any other country in history. You know, if you can look this up, as far as I know, I mean, there hasn't been any other country in history that has excelled as quickly when it comes to the poverty level that it used to be in, you know, right after the Korean War, to the level that it's at now. They show pictures of like North Korea was so much nicer than South Korea at the time, and other countries as well. It's excelled so fast. It's now one of the top ones for, you know, electronics, movies, you know, car industry, even travel. I mean, it's a huge travel industry now. It's incredible. It's really incredible. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of it did have to do with the people. From what I understood, they actually pulled themselves out of poverty. This is one of the most amazing things I ever heard. But the people themselves, they took all the jewels or gold or whatever that they could find and they gave it all to the government so they could buy off the debt so that they could start to, I mean, that's incredible, you know, to do something like that. That shows pride, right?
This was during the IMF crisis, I remember.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when, but you probably would know better than me. But I just think that it really does show that Korea has a lot of pride. It really does. I mean, they've been taken over by it's really actually surprising this country exists. Considering the history that it's had, it's been under siege and occupied numerous times by huge you know, armies that have just come and wiped this place out. And yet it's still more than exists. It's actually now becoming one of the most prominent countries in the world, even though it's a tiny little, you know, tiny little thing that's right off the end of China. You know what I mean? It's really strange. The only problem, of course, you got North Korea, which eventually that has to be resolved at some point. It can't stay this way forever. You know, like how that's going to happen, I don't know, but that's a, that's definitely something that we're always talking about and thinking about. But yeah, I mean, I, you know, God making things known so that people have at least a better chance of even knowing about the country itself. Sure. I mean, that sounds kind of something that God would do.
There's gotta be a reason for it.
Okay. Maurice, I super want to thank you for being here because I know how busy you are, guys. I mean, Unang Hirit is a morning show.
In honor, of course.
No. Oh my. Unang Hirit is a morning show. They're on at 5:30, which means she has to be up at least at the latest, like 4. Because, you know, we're girls, like we got to pretty up and we got to get dressed and all that stuff. And then she does her coverage all day. She can be out in the field covering a story. I mean, right now, I'm sure it's crazy with
elections. I was in Camp Crame a while ago.
Oh, gosh. Right. Yeah. She writes her own stories. You know, she produces her own story. Then she has to deliver the news. I mean, it's a really long day for you. And so for you to squeeze in the podcast, I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much. And I want to take a quick photo and send it to my mom. Mom, we have Marie Somali because we only see you on like TV. I'm so giddy, Instructor Eric. It's like,
did you get a good picture?
You had your mouth open, but it's okay. It's just my mom.
I did it on purpose.
One more. Smile, everybody. Okay, thanks.
Okay, all right. Like when I was thinking about what you do, and I'm sure you hear more bad news than good news, because I feel like, I don't know, people are more interested in the controversial stuff and bad news, I think, sells more and stuff like that. And you've been doing this for 20 years. Was there ever a time where you were like, wow, this is kind of sucking the life out of me, or it's sucking the joy out of me? Is it challenging to be a journalist in that way?
Really very challenging, especially when you get some interviewees who are evasive, who do not want to be interviewed at all. Those are the most difficult moments or the most challenging ones for me, especially when I'm really asked to deliver and to interview this person and this person doesn't even want to be interviewed. So we really have to go through a lot of channels just to get to that person. Those are just some of the more difficult ones. Of course, on a daily basis, we have to deal with a lot of physical elements, especially when we have to cover calamities, wars, when we have to be assigned to Mindanao, for example. When I was very young, I was assigned in Mindanao for a month. I was just supposed to cover the Balikatan exercises. The training of the American and the Filipino soldiers. It was supposed to happen in Mindanao, in Zamboanga. So I was assigned there. It was just supposed to be for a few days, 3 to 4 days. But then when I got there, the encounter between the Abu Sayyaf and the military happened. And it was during that time when Martin Burnham was killed and Eddie Bora was killed and Gracia Burnham was actually saved, but she was injured during that time. There were the three remaining hostages of the Abu Sayyaf during that time. Oh, and all the senior reporters who went before me are all back in Manila already because there was a lull because during that time, they kept on waiting until those three remaining hostages will be saved. And then when there was a lull, everyone came back to Manila. And it was during that time when I was assigned there that thing happened. So talk about being at the right place at the right time. I was there. Wow. I don't know if it's really a right place for me to be in there. But I was there and I got to experience those things. So I stayed there for a whole month because the news just kept on giving birth to another news. So new hostages were captured by the Abu Sayyaf, the Indonesian hostages. And then until Abu Sabaya was killed, he's the spokesperson of Abu Sayyaf during that time. So those kinds of things, a lot of things, which most of us are not really prepared for. But then those things happen. And this is, I think, segueing to the revelations. I think this is also what the revelation, the book of revelations, try to teach us, to just be prepared for anything, for the second coming, just to be ready, to be watchful. Because a lot of us right now in these days, we try to be lax or complacent. We think there's still a lot of time. It's not trying to scare the people who are watching us or who are listening to us, but I think it just everything around us that's happening right now, even the war in Ukraine, and then of course the pandemic and everything, the calamities that are happening every year, are just trying to teach us to be ready, to be prepared, more responsible for our souls, to be more watchful. It's teaching us.
And you're a very devout Catholic. And I remember one time we were talking, I think you were a lector at that time. Are you still a lector?
Yes, I'm still a lector. I'm still a very active lector right now. So even if I basically am filled with a lot of things to do for the whole week, I make sure that on Saturdays and Sundays I serve. Because before I got the Unang Hirit break, I used to serve in the church on weekdays too. So at 6 a.m., I serve in the church. I usually take the Wednesday and Friday because those days have novenas, the Our Lady of Perpetual Help novena on Wednesday, and then, of course, the Sacred Heart novena on Friday. But then right now, since my work starts at 5:30 to 8 in the morning for Unang Hirit, and then I continue with my field report for the whole day, so I don't get to serve anymore in the church on weekdays. But so I made a commitment to the Lord to still serve on Saturday and Sunday since I don't have work on those days. Actually, before I got Unang Hirit, but they were already getting me to pinch hit or to substitute for some of the hosts. I already made like a pact to the Lord. I said, Lord, if you're going to give me this break, how can I serve you on weekdays? And I usually finish or complete the Simbang Gabi, the 9 days of Dawn Masses every December from December 16 to 24. So I've been doing that with Rafi for several years now. So I just told him, how can I do that if you will give me this break? But then he still gave me the break. So I think he has the consent to give me the break. And then in exchange, I just told God that I will be serving him on Saturday and Sunday when I don't have work. So every Saturday, I serve at 7 a.m. So that's the mass that I take usually so that I can still rest, because there are actually some available slots in the afternoon, but I usually just spend it for watching K-dramas.
And oh, here we go. Full circle moment. We are back to the K-drama, people.
Yeah, because I want to do the masses in the morning so that, you know, put God first.
Right. No, and I'm like,
and then do the rest in the afternoon.
And I can't believe, like, you were feeling bad about taking the 7 a.m. when there's 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. I'm like, 7 a.m. is super early on a Sunday morning. What is she feeling bad about?
And actually, Marie, in all honesty, Marie, did you ever, like, notice that, like, when you do the morning show now, it seems like, oh, it's the time goes so much faster? Because both Sam and I did the morning show for the station. I feel like 3 hours is like, whoo, that's it. And then I have the whole day to myself.
That's true. That's true.
Earlier, before we hit record, you were talking a little bit about how you felt about the book of Revelation. You know, how you don't really read it because it scares you, which is something we hear all the time. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
There are a lot of symbolisms that I don't really understand. And maybe, I don't know, sometimes if you try to read those things and no one will be able to explain to you, there's a tendency for me to think too much. And maybe I wouldn't I wouldn't be able to do my work anymore because I'm thinking too much or I'm stressing myself so much with things that are beyond me. So better to not just read it or to not know it.
But
I know as a lector also, I would really need to read those things also.
No, and I think that's a common response that we see from our guests, right? And even personally for me, I think before we started talking about this on the podcast, I wasn't really interested in the book. I never really took time to read the book. And even when I did, as you say, I didn't really understand what these words meant. And I think that is what I find so compelling about the series that we're doing now, which we're calling Road to Revelation, because one of the churches, Shinshoji Church of Jesus, on this podcast, they are testifying about this book. And their understanding is that these symbolisms that we see in the book of Revelation, there is an understanding that is given to somebody. And so that is what they are testifying and that is what they're sharing, right? Instructor Erin, you may take over now. Please.
First, I've just been fascinated. Like, just listening to everything that you're doing has been incredible. Like, she's putting all of us to shame, right? And it's just, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, man, I got to pick it up a little bit. I got to start doing some extra work. And
a Sunday, 5:30.
No, it's really incredible. And also on top of that, making sure that you are, you know, keeping with your faith as well. That's usually something that goes on the wayside when people start getting into their careers and really becoming, you know, busy in different ways. That's one of the things that unfortunately people kind of set aside. So I was really impressed. I thought that was really, it was just beautiful to listen to. So yeah, it's really nice to meet you actually. And what you're saying about Revelation, it's so true. It's just a kind of a weird book for a lot of people. It hasn't been very easy. And as Sam was pointing out, it has a lot to do with because of the way that it's written, of course. And you're right that people can't explain it well, and there's a reason for that. I mean, obviously God is the one who has written it in that way. So he's the one that has what we call sealed it, right? When it's sealed, it's something that is not able to be understood well. So it's something that has to be revealed or opened up, and then people can actually, you know, understand it. So the kind of like the pattern of what needs to happen is people need to know what the prophecy is first, right? What is the prophecy? And then explain, what does that prophecy mean, right? What does that prophecy mean? And then when the actual fulfillment is being shown, then you can understand what the fulfillment is because you know what the prophecy means. So for example, like one of the crazy ones is in Revelation 9, there's these horses that have their heads on their tails and they're breathing fire, right? Fire, smoke, and sulfur. And they kill a third of mankind. I mean, that sounds horrific. You know, if you were to read that, people would just be like, what is that talking about? That just sounds like, you know, just complete damage and destruction. So then you have to ask, okay, what does it mean that a horse has a head on its tail? Why does the tail look like a serpent? Why is it breathing fire? You know, all of these things, they have a meaning to them. And when you look into the scriptures, God explains these meanings. He gives understanding of what each of these terms mean. The horse has a meaning. The head has a meaning. The fact that it's on a tail actually means something. You know, the fact that it's breathing fire, that means something. All of these things mean something. So then you can explain the understanding of that prophecy. This is what it means for people to understand. And then when the actual reality comes, then you put the two together. So the reason that we're able to, as Sam has pointed out, testify to what these things are, the reason that we're saying that is because the physical realities have appeared. If the physical realities appear, then you can know what the figurative meaning is, because now you're looking at the actual reality. And the difference between looking at a reality that people think it is, like, oh, I think this is the fulfillment of Revelation, right? This war is happening here. This money is being created there. So I think that has to do with Revelation, right? Or this country is becoming powerful. This one's being weak. Instead of like people's own mind where they say, oh, I think this is what's happening. What we're saying is that the literal events took place. And according to Revelation, there has to be someone who is witnessing the events. And how they know they're witnessing them is not because they just figured it out, but because there's angels that are with that person showing them. So when you read the book of Revelation, this is why it's important to read it, because you have to see the wording that's in there. It says, then I saw, right? Then I saw a beast coming out of the sea. Or it says, the angel took me out into the desert and showed me a prostitute sitting on a beast. So when that actually happens, there has to be someone who is being shown these things by the angels of heaven. Now, to a non-believer, that's just going to sound foolish because they don't believe in God. They don't believe in angels. But if we believe in God, and if we believe that God works through his angels and works through people, then at some point, this has to be fulfilled, right? It's a prophecy, and God's not a liar. So there has to be a moment in history when God says, I'm going to fulfill it. And he wants everyone to come to know what that fulfillment actually is. Because the only way that you can, you know, worship according to truth is by learning the truth, right? So there has to be a place in which the truth is being proclaimed. So that's why the, like, one of the main things of Revelation is that there is a tabernacle, a church, a place that's being created where people can come to and they can actually learn the truth, right? That's why it's called the Temple of Testimony. Right, where there's a testimony that's going. And so all of these things, but they are broken down just like bit by bit. And like Sam said, today we're going to be talking about, you know, the groom. Yeah.
Yes. Bride, the bridegroom, widow, bride, widow, and orphan. So this language of, I am going to marry you, or, you know, I... No, but you see this in the Bible, right? And God is the one that's saying it. And I remember, there are people who say, you know, and these are like, you know, religious, like preachers and people like that. They would say, you know, God wants to marry you. And I'm a little weirded out with that because I relate to God as a father. Mm-hmm. And so when you say that this entity that I relate to as a father wants to marry me, I'm like,
I'd be like,
why?
I want to marry my dad.
Exactly. but you see that in the Bible, God tells certain people that I'm going to marry you, or like, I was a husband to you. Or in the book of Revelation in particular, like, we see someone who's dressed as a bride. And then there's widow and orphan. I don't know. I guess it's like a family affair or something. But yes, this is something that you see in the Bible. And we're going to break that down because according to Shinshenji's understanding, this language, at least in prophecy, this is figurative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is physical, of course, there's always the physical side in the Bible. There's physical brides, obviously, there's, you know, physical grooms, there's physical children, widows, all those things. So one thing I always want to, you know, make clear to people, when we're talking about the figurative understanding, we're not taking away from the physical as well. So when people say that as a good Christian, we should take care of widows and orphans, because that's what it says, right? This is the kind of religion, like James says, this is the kind of religion that I like, that you take care of the widows and the orphans, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, but you don't have to be religious to do that, right? You can be just a good person in the world and take care of people.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be religious to take care of widows and orphans, but you do have to be religious to take care of spiritual widows and orphans, because it has to do with the church. It has to do with people in the church.
Yeah. So I'm going to squeeze in another story here, right? So early in my faith, as I was trying to kind of, I guess I was like, that was my seeking phase, where I was just trying out different things. And I had met a pastor, and he was running an orphanage / like a girl's home, right? And he invited me over because he knew, because I was asking him a lot of questions. And he was like, Sam, why don't you come over one day and, you know, just hang out with us? And so I did, you know, met these wonderful kids and girls and stuff like that. And then he said to me at the end of that day, congratulations, you just practiced James chapter 1, verse 27, which reads, and I wrote this down because, like, I was really thinking about this as I was coming to today's recording, right? Which reads, religion that God the Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And so I was like, why is that religion? Like, I mean, I understand that widows, orphans, obviously, it's a very unfortunate position to be in. And all, like, God would, of course, want them to be taken care of. But why would God say that is the religion that God the Father accepts? You know what I mean? It's probably not God who said that, because this is in the book of James. So James said that. But you know what I mean, right?
God said it through James, right? Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, huh, that's odd. But why? But yeah, let's get into it, Instructor Aaron.
Well, like I said, it's not that you have to be religious to do that, right? But you should also include that in your life of faith, that you are doing good deeds, right? You're doing good deeds and stuff. James is very big on that too. You go to the next chapter, chapter 2, which is really controversial actually. And he says, you know, you show me your faith, I'll show you my deeds, because faith without deeds is dead, is what he says. So some people are always like, well, you can't work your way to heaven. And of course not. We're not ever saying that, you know, but you have to be able to practice your faith, right? You have to be able to not just call yourself a believer, but show the world that you are through your actions, you know, that type of thing. But when it comes to spiritual, that becomes something a little different. First, you have to even know what that means in order to accomplish it, right? You can't carry out an action if you don't even know what the action means. So what does it mean to care for spiritual widows or spiritual orphans? Well, to do that, you have to know what marriage is to begin with. So when we think about marriage is really interesting, right? It's like, you know, certain cultures have it, certain cultures don't. It's definitely in the Bible, right? It's something that's a core value in a lot of people's faith in the Bible and things like that. Where did it come from and why is it there? You know, the thing is that God uses the physical things of the world so that he can teach us something spiritual. So the reason that marriage exists in the Bible, it's not just so that people have a good relationship, but God actually wants to teach us about our relationship with him. That's the real key of it. So how does he do that, right? How does God, who is this incredible being that is unseen, invisible, all-powerful, how does he teach us about the most intimate relationship that you can have? You do it through something that we can understand, which is spiritual marriage. So when you look at the Bible, it actually says, one of the really interesting verses is in Ephesians chapter 5. When you look at like verses 31 and 32, but it says, this is the marriage, you know, that a man will leave his mother and father and be joined with his wife, and the two will become one flesh, right? And they talk about that as being marriage. Now, we think about it as even like a spiritual thing, because we know that's not physical. You don't physically become one person. We don't morph into one, right? One being, right? You know what I mean? Mm. But we think about it as you become a family unit. You become like one family type of thing, right? So God is, again, using that. And it even says right there, it says that it's a mystery. Actually, this is a mystery. And he's talking about Christ and the church. So it's not the marriage that God really wants us to be concerned with. It's this relationship between something that is spirit and something that is flesh. Okay, spirit and flesh. This is the most important thing. Understanding how God works in the Bible. Understanding the relationship between God and God's people. And really important is the relationship between God and Jesus. Once you understand spiritual marriage, you will understand the relationship between God and Jesus in a completely, like, just full way, I can say. Like, just very deep understanding of that relationship that didn't exist in people's minds before. So the verse that you brought up before is in Hosea chapter 2, verse 19 says, I will betroth you to me forever, right? God is actually promising that he's going to marry. And who is he going to marry? He's going to marry the one that he brings, right? His chosen one that he brings. And of course, who is that? That's Jesus. So the spiritual marriage in the Bible, okay, we know physical marriage is a physical, you know, physical groom and a physical bride, and they get together and they become one family, and then they have children, right? The male and the female get together, they become a family, they have children. If the spouse passes away, they become
a widow.
A widow. Yeah. If they both pass away, then the children become
orphans.
Right. So now we think about this in a spiritual way. We know God is spirit. Right. John chapter 4, verse 24, God is spirit, right? That's what Jesus says. But he says he wants to marry. He wants to marry his people. And the one that he married in the time of the first coming, the only one that he could become one with, because God couldn't become one with his people in the Old Testament because they had sin within them. So he wanted to be like a husband to them. He wanted to be connected with them, but he couldn't do it until that sin was resolved. But when Jesus came, he was born without sin. Right? He's born by the spiritual seed of God. So he has no sin. That's what it says. He was sinless. And then when you look at verse like 3:16, Matthew 3:16, it says that the Spirit of God became one with Jesus, right? The Spirit of God descended upon Jesus and the two became one. John chapter 10, verse 30, I and the Father are one.
Are one.
Right? So the Spirit of God and the flesh of Jesus became one. That's spiritual marriage. So in the spiritual understanding, the groom, right? The bridegroom is spirit. The bride is the flesh. That's why we are called the brides of Christ. Right? Because we're the flesh. What does Jesus want to do? He wants to dwell within our hearts. Jesus as the Spirit. You think of like Romans chapter 8 says, anyone who does not have the Spirit of Christ does not belong to Christ, because we want Jesus' Spirit within us. So now think about the family unit. What did God want? He wanted a family. He wants his children. That's why, like you said, we call him Father. So God is our spiritual father. Jesus is our spiritual mother. That's why in Galatians chapter 4, it says, and I think it's 4:26, Galatians 4:26, it says our mother from above, which is actually referring to, you know, Jesus, the one who gave birth to us. Because in a physical marriage, what happens? The man and the woman get together and they have children. God became one with Jesus and they had spiritual children, which were the disciples. That's why he calls them his children. So he had how many children? He had the 12 disciples, right? They became the 12 tribes of what's called spiritual Israel, because they're no longer physical, right? It's not the physical bloodline. When you look at John chapter 1, it says, it's not a matter of a man and a woman getting together anymore, but anyone who believes in Jesus has the right to become a child of God, right? The spiritual, being born spiritually.
Right.
So the marriage that happens in the beginning. Oh, go ahead, please.
I'm sorry. Can I just clarify something? So you mean like in the Old Testament, for someone to be considered part of the chosen people, like you had to be born of a certain lineage, right? You had to be the descendant of so-and-so, and that would make you part of a certain tribe. And those were God's chosen people. And so if you weren't born physically into a certain family, then you were a Gentile, is what you call them, right?
Yeah. But then
with Jesus' coming, that right to become a part of the chosen people was now just opened up to like whoever will believe in Jesus was now part of the chosen people. Is what you mean, right? Is
yeah, they called them, they're called spiritual Jews, if you will, in like Romans chapter 2. Said a Jew is not a Jew if he's one outwardly, right? And circumcision is not outward and physical, but circumcision of the heart. And a Jew is one that's written by the Spirit, right? It's by the Spirit, not by the written code, but by the Spirit. So they're not physical anymore. It's not physical bloodline that allows you to be a child of God. It's anyone who's born from the seed of God. Right? The seed of God. And Luke chapter 8, verse 11, the seed of God is the word. So that's what it means to be like born again, right? To be born by the word of God. First Peter chapter 1, verse 23, for you have been born again by the imperishable seed of God, right? The word, the living word of God. So in the time of the first coming, that was what God desired. He wanted to create his family once again, right? His people, his children. That's why Jesus says we call him Father. When we pray the Lord's Prayer, our Father who art in heaven. How can he be our Father if we're not born from his seed, right? Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, okay, because there is the groom being the Spirit, there's more than one groom in the world because there's more than one Spirit in the world. There's God who is the true husband, but then you also have the false gods. Yeah, Satan. And so if you are becoming one, if you're becoming one with Satan, then that's what they call committing like adultery.
Oh, I've become one with him plenty of times growing up.
Because again, everything that God, you know, everything that's physical, God uses for something spiritual. So he's teaching us to remain faithful, right? To remain faithful to God and Jesus. In verses like 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 2, Paul says, I promised you to Christ as a pure virgin, right? But he's talking to all people. He's talking to all of them. And he says he wants to actually promise us in order to be with, you know, with God and Jesus, meaning that we are remaining pure within the word. We're not defiling ourselves, as it says, with, you know, the false teachings. If you want to be a child of God, you have to be born by God's seed, right? But when Jesus comes in the first coming, he says to the Pharisees and the scribes, he says, your father is the devil and you want to carry out your father's desire. They're like, what are you talking about? Our father is Abraham. He's like, no, your father is the devil. So how did they become the children of the devil? They had to be born by that seed, right? So what did God want them to do? To be born again, to be recreated back into that image. How are they doing that? Through Jesus. They were being born through Jesus. He was like their spiritual mother, giving them that seed of truth. So in the Bible, it's all about perspective. Okay, it's all about perspective. Who's the groom? Who's the bride? So in the time when God and Jesus got together, they were husband and wife and gave birth to the children, the disciples. But then after Jesus left, he became spirit, right? He's in the spiritual realm. And then he came to be one with his disciples. That's why it says the spirit of Christ is within us, right? So now Jesus becomes that spiritual groom and we become the brides of Christ, which is why Paul, right? The one he called the rock star, right? Paul in Galatians chapter 4, verse 19, he says, I am again in the pains of childbirth until Christ is formed in you. Paul's a man, but he says he's in the pains of childbirth. He's giving birth to believers because he, in spiritually speaking, he's in the role of a woman because Christ is, you know, Jesus is the spirit. He's the groom and he's the one giving the seed, the word of God. We're accepting the seed and then we are creating that into the hearts of the people. We're giving birth to believers in that way. He also calls himself a nursing mother. If you go to like 1 Corinthians chapter 3, right? He says that he gave them, he says, you know, you want to crave pure spiritual milk that I'm giving you, right? That spiritual milk. So he's the one that gave birth to them. He's the one that's nursing them, giving them, you know, that spiritual milk. So that's what a group, I mean, that's what the marriage actually represents. And that relationship between God and Jesus, it was that spirit and that flesh that came together. Now, why do we need to know this? Because in Revelation, there's the wedding that actually takes place. Right? There are prophecies like in Matthew chapter 22 or Luke chapter 14. And then of course, Revelation 19 that talk about, you know, the wedding of the Lamb, right? The wedding of the Lamb. So we have to know what that means in order to be a part of it.
Right. Are you going to end it there?
No. I want you guys to have a chance to talk. There's a little more, but I just wanted, you know, wanted to hear your thoughts so far.
I'm just like, wowed.
Maurice. This is so new to me. I mean, I didn't know that it was Jesus who is the spiritual mother. So yeah. I'm just trying to absorb everything that you're saying.
Yeah.
But it really makes sense, except that a lot of those things which you mentioned, I haven't read them yet.
No, of course.
So I'm just trying
to. Now, moving on to like widows and orphans, okay? Because you have to understand that first. So now imagine a pastor is in a position of a bride, right? They are the flesh. They're the ones that are supposed to receive the seed from the spirit, from the groom, and then give birth to believers. All of the congregation, they would be like their children. They're feeding them the spiritual milk or they're giving birth to believers. So they're in the position of a spiritual bride and they're meant to remain pure, right? Not commit spiritual adultery. So if you look at verses like in Jeremiah chapter 3 or Jeremiah chapter 8, it says that you committed adultery by worshiping every false god, right? By accepting every false teaching. So they're meant to remain pure, but if they do betray God and they accept false teachings, then what happens if you accept the word of Satan over God? What happens to your spirit?
Dies.
You die.
It dies. Because God's word is life, right? God's word is life, but Satan's word is not life, it's death. So you can think about the tree of life, the tree of the knowledge of, you know, good and evil, right? So if you accept false teachings, then your spirit dies, which means the groom is no longer with you. So you become a spiritual widow.
How exactly do you know that it's a false teaching?
That's a good point.
I second the motion. Inquiring minds want to know,
Well, said inquiring minds will have to wait till our next episode to find out. And if you can believe it, we go even deeper into the meaning of bridegroom, bride, widow, and orphan in the Bible. In the meantime, please make sure to catch Marie's on GMA's Unang Hirit if you're a morning person. And if not, that's fine too, because she's on all day. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Narrow Door Podcast.